So James writes, "What good is it, my brothers, if someone says he has faith but does not have works? Can that faith save him? If a brother or sister is poorly clothed and lacking in daily food, and one of you says to them, 'Go in peace, be warmed and filled,' without giving them the things needed for the body, what good is that? So also faith by itself, if it does not have works, is dead. But someone will say, 'You have faith and I have works. Show me your faith apart from your works, and I will show you my faith by my works.' You believe that God is one, you do well. Even the demons believe and shudder. Do you want to be shown, you foolish person, that faith apart from works is useless? Was not Abraham our father justified by works when he offered up his son Isaac on the altar? You see that faith was active along with his works, and faith was completed by his works. And the scripture was fulfilled that said, 'Abraham believed God, and it was counted to him as righteousness, and he was called a friend of God.' You see that a person is justified by works and not by faith alone. And in the same way, was not also Rahab the prostitute justified by works when she received the messengers and sent them out by another way? For as the body apart from the spirit is dead, so also faith apart from works is dead." Do you have your Bibles open in front of you, if you will? So page 1012 again is where we find ourselves. James chapter 2, verses 14 to 26. As we begin, there may be some of us who have sat in front of these verses on perhaps more than one occasion and struggled to bring together what James says here. That's not unusual. It's a passage which requires a good deal of time. Is a very important ingredient to understand these verses. And hopefully that's what we have a little of this morning as we look through this. And sometimes the struggle is not just understanding what James says, but also bringing the information that we have from other parts of Scripture, isn't it? Perhaps from the writings of Paul in the New Testament. Some of what James says seems to have a little bit of trouble meshing with what Paul says, perhaps in Romans and some of the other epistles. And so we can come sometimes to the conclusion that they are in opposition to each other. Let me start by saying and assure you that that is not the case. So let's spend some time on our foundations this morning before we really get into these verses fully. Now, as some of you will be aware, Paul is seen as majoring on grace through faith, producing salvation, that we cannot be justified or made right with God by the works that we do, the works that are according to the law that was given through Moses. Let me give you an example. Paul says in Romans chapter 3, "For we hold that one is justified by faith apart from the works of the law." Okay? So, justified, made right with God by faith, and that is apart from the works of the law. They are not included in that process. James then insists that works should accompany a living faith, as we find and we have read in chapter 2 just here. So are these exclusive positions, or can we find their common ground? As I said, let's find the common ground. I believe that we can see that this morning as we spend some time. As we can study and look at the verses in James here, I think that some of the difficulties encountered in our minds when we reach the word works. Okay, I think that would be fair to say that as we are reading through it, that is the point where we just go, hold on a sec, not sure about where this is going. Now perhaps we often subconsciously assign it a negative meaning when we see it in the Bible because, as I already quoted, we see it very most frequently in the lens of Paul, don't we? Okay, much of the writings of the New Testament are from Paul, and very often the way that he talks about works are works of the law, okay? And it has a negative connotation, if you will. The Bible is clear on the fact that nothing that we can do is going to be good enough of itself to bring us closer to God. Because let us not be too slow to say that reliance on the works of the law is not enough. It cannot ever bring us closer to God, as Paul would write. Let me quote also further in Romans to give us the picture. Romans chapter 3, verse 20, you may be familiar. For by the works of the law, no human being will be justified, again, made right, in God's sight, since through the law comes knowledge of sin. Further, Galatians 2, verse 16, also written by Paul, we know that a person is not justified by works of the law, but through faith in Jesus Christ. So we also have believed in Christ Jesus in order to be justified by faith in Christ and not by works of the law. Because by works of the law, no one will be justified. By works of the law, no one will be brought closer to God. However, we can find ourselves maybe mentally roadblocked by this, can't we? When we come to James with the lens or the paradigm of Paul. So take ourselves from those verses of Paul and jump immediately into James. Maybe that's the problem sometimes. Okay? Because if we're even a little too quick to read the verses from James, we can easily miss the point and come away with the wrong understanding. And sometimes then that means that we'll just leave James aside, or we won't read it too often, maybe once a year will do, or more than that, or less than that. Let us begin again. Verse 14, please look down with me. What good is it, my brothers, if someone says he has faith but does not have works? Can that faith save him? Take your time. Let me read it to you again from another translation that I hope may quickly give us a clear message that James wishes to present us with. Listen carefully. What good is it, dear brothers and sisters, if you say you have faith, but don't show it by your actions? Can that kind of faith save anyone? Just a slight turn of phrase, but I hope maybe that has been helpful for you and will continue to be helpful as we look at it this morning. The works, or actions, as we see in this second translation that James speaks of, are not works of the law. So that's the lens and the paradigm of Paul, and he makes that clear very often. He talks about the law of Moses, the law given by God. James speaks of the works or actions that are not works of the law, that are able to seek God's approval or to get his attention or to get him to feel that we are kind of balancing up our good and bad actions. James, as we see here in this verse, is talking about actions that stem from, or that have their root in, or that begin with faith. Okay? So it's a different way around. So it's not works that lead to faith and salvation. That's not how it's going. This is actions and works, activities, if you like, that are beginning with faith. Okay? So that is the point from James. That is where we are coming from as we begin. And so I hope we can avoid that misstep as we carry on in these verses in James. Because does that mean then Paul is out of step? If we've kind of squared James's teaching, does that mean that Paul is in the wrong? No. That he doesn't teach that someone saved by grace through faith should live in a way that reflects that. To use Paul's own phrasing from Romans 6, certainly not. That is not what he's saying. It's not that Paul is saying that someone saved by grace shouldn't live in a way that reflects that. That's not what he's saying. And as I say, read further in Romans chapter 6 if you need some further working out on that. But if we go back a moment, we should see that in actual fact, James and Paul are in absolute agreement that faith should, be accompanied by suitable actions. What could we look at? Some verses that would teach us about grace through faith. Probably the most famous and referred to, Ephesians chapter 2, aren't they? We had them as our motto text a year or two ago. Ephesians 2 verses 8 to 10 say these words. For by grace you have been saved through faith, and that not of yourselves, it is the gift of God, not as a result of works, so that no one may boast. These are the writings of Paul. We're still with him, okay? Grace through faith. But then he continues on, and sometimes we don't get there. Paul continues on. For we are his workmanship, created in Christ Jesus, similar to James, for good works. For good works. Okay, the works follow the salvation. They follow the free gift of God. These are the writings of Paul, the writings of James, which God prepared beforehand so that we would walk in them. The first two verses, as I say, are some of the most often used to understand the nature of Christian salvation. And the third is the direct result of true and real saving faith, which is exactly what James is concerned with setting out in this second chapter that we have before us this morning. This could be summarized by saying, religion says, I obey, and therefore I'm accepted. But the gospel says, I'm accepted, and therefore I obey. Okay? So I hope that's been helpful as we begin looking at James. That is just going to stop us from tripping ourselves up right there at the beginning. The words that James says and the explanation that he gives, the doctrine that he's teaching us, is not in opposition to Paul. It's not a second New Testament. All right? We're always looking at works that come out of a true and real faith. So, I'd like us to look at two things this morning as we look at these verses in James. I'd like us to look at real faith. And I'd like us to look at roots and fruits. Okay? Those two subject titles under the topic of real faith. So if James is most interested in looking at what real faith is, where do we start? Let me tell you a short story before we begin. Emma and I and Caitlin were down in Dorset just at the end of August on a holiday short break to see some friends and staying in this little B&B. And it just so happens that the owner of the B&B, one, had gone out to Vietnam. Her daughter was there teaching English, etc. And during the course of the conversation with the gentleman, we found out that he was quite interested in his watches. And he told us one morning that his wife had been along to this market and that she'd picked up this Patek Philippe watch. And if there's anyone familiar with horology in this room, you know that these pieces can cost quite a significant amount of money, often into the hundreds of thousands, if you'll believe that. So he'd been picked up this Patek Philippe watch. Now, a year ago or 2 years ago, Emma and I were also in Vietnam and went to one of these similar markets. And at the time, my company that I was working for made displays for watches. And I was just starting to get an interest and an idea of what watches were what and what goes on with them. And likewise, I saw these Patek Philippes and these Hublots and Tag Heuers and whatever else you like. And they were going for a pittance, £20, something like this. I was like, that can't be right. Look again. Yeah, that's what it says. That's what it says on the dial. No spelling mistakes. No? Okay. But what he's got, now this gentleman, he's going to be very happy because he knew that they weren't real watches, right? Okay, he said he loves the Patek Philippe, that's why he's been picked up this watch, but he knows that it's not the real deal, okay? It's cost £20 something. He'd be absolutely going crazy if his wife had spent that on a watch, right? But that watch, okay, as soon as it gets back, might work for a while, okay? The battery will be okay. Maybe the battery will fail at some point, okay? But also maybe something will fall off, something will not quite go right. When he takes it into the dealer, he'll know what's really going to happen, okay? Because it's not a real Patek Philippe watch, whatever it is, okay? When we come to James, we are talking about that difference between real and false, okay? Or real and supposed. And we're interested in real faith. That's what James is most interested in uncovering for us. That's why he tells us these stories, these kind of alluded things to maybe a story that we would find familiar. People that are going past people in need and not giving them what they need, what their requirements are. We see that he asks a series of stories, real life situations perhaps that we'd be familiar with, and a couple of others that are from the Bible itself about Abraham, Rahab, and so on. Now, as we look through these verses, I'd like us to focus on three words. I'm going to take you through them. The first is words itself, okay? The second is heart, and the third being actions. Now, we could almost picture this as a triangle, and I hope this is going to be helpful for us. So picture heart at the top of this triangle, and at the bottom two corners, words and actions. Okay? A full equilateral triangle, heart at the top, words and actions at the bottom. Let me take you through. We see words, or people saying things, what people say, brought up several times, verses 14, 16, 18. I'm not really going to stop, but you can look down. You can see what that is. We also see, secondly, the hearts of these people that are talked about. And this can be expressed. You won't see this word particularly in its own form as hearts, but we can see this expressed as faith, or we can see it expressed as belief, which, of course, is held in the heart. Okay, we could say that that's maybe a thing of the mind, but very much more in the Bible it talks about belief, about faith, being something that's kept in the heart, isn't it? Okay, belief and faith, that's something really essential to the core of a person. So we're going to say that that's in the heart. And we see that a great number of times, verses 14, 17, 18, 19, 20, 22, 23, 24, 26. There's probably only a couple of verses that don't mention faith and belief. Finally, then, we also see actions, or conversely, the lack of actions, don't we, in verses 14, 16, 17, 18, 20, 21, 22, 24, 25, 26. Okay? So you'll see that even though maybe those words didn't immediately leap off the page to you, James is really concerned with these three words and the connection between them. Okay? As we look at that in the following minutes. The reason that the triangle may be helpful for us is this. Remember the layout I gave you? Can you just picture it in your mind? So we've got heart at the top, then words and actions at the two bottom corners. Can I just ask you before I tell you again a little story from Jesus, can you think why that might be significant? Why might that be significant? Heart at the top and words and actions in the bottom two corners of the triangle. Just see if you can answer that for yourself a moment, and we'll come back to it. Let me also then, in connection with that, quote these words from Jesus. He told a couple of little stories for the people that he was around in this point in the Bible in Matthew 12. He said these words, "For no tree bears bad fruit, nor again does a bad tree bear good fruit. For each tree is known by its own fruit. For figs are not gathered from thorn bushes, and nor are grapes picked from a bramble bush. The good person out of the good treasure of his heart produces good, and the evil person out of the evil treasure in his heart produces evil. For out of the abundance of his heart, his mouth speaks. Why do you call me Lord, Lord, and not do what I tell you? Each tree is known by its fruit, and out of the abundance of the heart, the mouth speaks." Did you get the answer to what I asked you about the triangle? What is the connection between these three words in this way? By picturing these three connected words, heart, words and actions, in this way, we see and be reminded that our heart, just as Jesus explained in this other separate picture, our heart is the source of both our words and our actions. And while our heart is not visible except to God, our words and our actions are seen by each other, aren't they? And people that we don't know, people that we do know, and they give a glimpse of what is at the root in our heart that comes out in our words and in our actions. But we see at the end there also that there can be a malfunction, can't there? In verse 26, that last verse that I read out to you, "Why do you call me Lord, Lord, and not do what I tell you?" Occasionally, Jesus says that there were people listening to his words and teachings who gave him respect with their words, but it wasn't from their hearts, because they didn't do what he said. Okay? So we see that he can see their heart because of their words and actions not marrying up. So where do the words come from? And then where do the actions come from? There's a disconnect there, isn't there? That should be holding together. The words and the actions should be stacking up, because then the heart shows the same thing, because the heart is the source of what they do and what they say. But one of the problems with the human heart is this division, isn't it? This is one of the problems with our hearts, that our words, heart, and actions should all look the same, but very often they don't. And so we can almost self-define what hypocrisy is, can't we? I found this definition that hypocrisy is the contrivance of a false appearance of virtue or goodness while concealing real character or inclinations. That's exactly what I just described, isn't it? And I think that we know in ourselves, it might not be something that we really like about ourselves, but whether it occurs rarely, or if we're perhaps more honest, more frequently, we'll have undoubtedly seen that in our own hearts and in our own lives to a lesser or greater extent. Don't you think? That is the purpose of James in these verses, to assess what is real faith and what is false faith, if you like, or, if we want to give it its proper name, hypocrisy. And the way in which he assesses this is how the triangle holds together. So again, picture the triangle in your mind's eye. We have words, heart, and actions that can either lead two ways. We can have words, heart, and actions that equal hypocrisy, or we can have words, heart, and actions that equal real faith, can't we? Those are our two options. But you know that hypocrisy and words, heart, and actions that don't hold together correctly, the Bible tells us lead to death. That's what James continues on with, and we're going to get there. But words, heart, and actions that equal real faith lead to life. If you see in verse 14, the question is whether the unseen heart of this person holds true faith or not. That is the crux of what James is asking and trying to uncover. James is not able, and nor are we, to see into the heart of another person and assess whether they have faith. It's not possible. However, James says that there is no action that comes from this claimed faith. Okay, you see in verse 14, if someone says he has faith. Okay, so we are now trying to assess, is that a true, a real faith or not? If someone says he has faith, but does not have works. James is trying to find this out. As he looks at the triangle that he can see, he's trying to work out at the top of the triangle, the heart, what's really going on there. But if he doesn't see words and actions that accord with what that person says, that heart is in question, isn't it? Part of the triangle is absent. The actions are not there. The words claim that there is faith, but the actions don't stack up. So James asks again, is this any good? Is this real faith? Is this a grace through faith, real living faith? That is a major question. It really, really matters. Because as we said, words, heart, and actions, they can either lead to hypocrisy and therefore death, or they can lead to real faith and life. We can look forward to verse 19 and see what kind of belief this might be that is claimed in verse 14. Have a look down there at verse 19. It's an intellectual agreement, but without actions that follow. Okay, verse 19 talks of believing that God is one. James admits, that's good. If you do, if you believe that God is one, good. Okay? But we see there is an intellectual agreement only. It is without the works and the actions, if you will, that follow. James even says that at least the demons, even in this way, have a more genuine and a more appropriate response to that same belief. That sounds incredible, doesn't it? But it's absolutely true that if they say, the demons, that God is one, just as someone else says God is one, and there are no actions to back this up, James is saying at least the demons, they shudder about it because they know the truth of it. They know what lies in wait for them at the fulfillment of their actions. But if instead you are content to say, I believe in God, yes, I'm even going to agree that I'm a sinner perhaps, I'm going to say anything you want to get you off my back, to be quite honest, but you don't think for 1 minute that you're going to live that way. If you're going to believe, if you're going to say that you can do this and that and the other, yeah, absolutely. Or you say, walk out the door, whatever. Does not matter one bit. That is what James is talking about. Right? That is not real faith. It cannot be, can it? Because the triangle is not holding its own structure. If it's only your words and some of your actions that you're going to give to God, that's not enough. That is only religion, isn't it? Remember the quote we had earlier? That is just doing things to try and appease God, or to try even just appease people to get them off your back, to get God off your back. It's only trying to do enough to be accepted. Let me describe it in this way. Real faith is a full triangle. Heart, words, and actions should all show real faith. Right? When we have trusted in Jesus, he changes our hearts, and then, having been accepted into his family, we want to obey in order to please him. Right? It's not for extra brownie points. It's not for extra credit. It's not to make sure that we're in the club. We want to obey to please him in order to live and speak in right ways that are good and right and pleasing to God. Secondly, then, roots and fruits. Let's continue as we look at the roots and the fruits of faith. And these are interconnected, so we'll tread on some of the same ground, but what we've already started to look at under real faith. But there is more that we need to look at. Now again, the things that James continues to make the case for his point in this sense, that faith, if it is not accompanied by appropriate actions, is dead. Okay, so he continues to point towards that goal. He gives us the example of both Abraham and Rahab. You see further down in the verses there. They are both commended for their faith in Hebrews 11. But as we said, James goes that little bit further. Okay. Now, in both of their circumstances, their faith was completed by their actions. That's what James says here. Okay. It was fulfilled in their actions, or completed by his works. Verse 22. Because would Abraham have really offered his son Isaac if he did not have real faith that God would save Isaac or bring him back from the dead? Remember again the triangle? In his heart, if he really didn't actually have faith, real faith, would he really have done that action? That's what James is trying to get to. Would Rahab have really hidden the Israelite spies if she did not have real faith that, and this is a quote from Joshua, these are the words that this lady Rahab said. The Lord your God, he is God in the heavens above and on the earth beneath. Those words sound like real faith. But what James says is that they were then backed up by her actions. Her actions could have cost her physical life. Her actions prove that she really believed what she said, and therefore it was in her heart too. In both these cases, there is, if we want to look at it in terms of roots and fruits, in both these cases, there is the root of faith and the fruit of the actions that bears witness to the real faith in their hearts. I guess it's just another way of looking at that triangle, isn't it? The root of faith in the heart being shown by the fruits of their actions. And to complete the triangle, we can see from the words of Rahab here on many occasions, the words of Abraham too. Okay, so if we were searching the scriptures for these things, we'd find that it all stacks up, either in the triangle or in the roots and the fruits. Now, roots and fruits, where did I get that from in James? I guess I didn't. But those verses we looked at from Jesus, Matthew chapter 12. Let's go back to that short story that we read. Again, if it's helpful for you, do turn there. Matthew chapter 12, verse 43 to 46. but we are staying mainly in James. But don't you think that story, as many of Jesus' stories, is incredibly revealing? It's a simple story, isn't it? About a tree, about flowers maybe you could say, or plants. The tree as a living entity is both enormously complex, isn't it? If we look at it on the kind of micro biological scale, if we look at how it photosynthesizes, how it does all these chemical processes to have life, to give life to its organism. But also the tree is astonishingly simple, isn't it? If we look at, you know, a tree outside this window or something. The tree or flowers or other plants, whichever you like, has roots and fruits. There's a lot in between, but it has roots and fruits. The tree that has roots but no fruits, as we come back to Jesus, is likely as not, if that continues in that way, at best, not very healthy. And really, at worst, the tree surgeon's going to come in because it's dead. He's going to chop it down, take it away. The plant or the tree that has fruits but no roots is unsustainable either. You don't really see too many trees like that, do you? Loads of fruits, no roots. It's not very sustainable. But we see that here in the picture that we have in front of us here, perhaps as well. We have these flowers, plenty of fruits, no roots. These flowers have produced their fruits, but even as they appear before us, a wonderful picture of life, they are in fact dead, are they not? Without significant intervention, these flowers are going to be dead in, say, a week, aren't they? Be thrown out, left for gone. That begs a very important question, doesn't it? How do you look in the light of all that we have covered this morning? If you want to grab onto that picture of the triangle, have a look at yourself through that lens. If you want to look at yourself through the picture of the roots and the fruits, have a look at that as well. But how do you yourself turn the camera on yourself in your mind's eye? How do you look this morning? How do you look as we think of the verses that and the words that James speaks of? Can you say that you have real faith? Can you say that that is the case? Because there is no room to be absent from this discussion. As James asked, do you likewise show your faith by your actions and by your words if you say you do have faith? Or are you like that person in verse 14, if someone says he has faith but does not have, as we saw in that separate translation, appropriate actions that flow from that? Can I ask maybe if your is your life as a healthy tree? Does it show both the roots of faith and also the fruits of godly actions and words? And if you need some more time on that, more thought on that, I encourage you to have a look at John chapter 15. That talks a lot about the healthy growing organism that has both fruits and shoots. Part of being connected to the true vine. Or has it just been a little unsettling this morning to think about this today? It may be that you would say that you have some belief, some faith, but are struggling a bit with the actions. Maybe even as we sit here this morning, we can think, yeah, I would say that, yeah, I believe that God is there. I believe that I'm probably not all that I should be. But where are the actions? Okay, so we're looking at your heart, but how about the bottom two parts of that triangle? How are your words? Maybe you would then say that, yeah, I have faith, I believe in God, and that's what people believe about you, that's what they believe about your heart, but then how are your actions? Really, very often, it's only us who can fully assess our actions, can't we? Because there is, as we hinted at earlier, sometimes that hypocrisy within us. And sometimes we just make sure we put out those correct actions that give a good picture of our hearts. We don't like to be ashamed in front of people. We don't like to be thought of badly. So maybe our actions don't stack up quite so well. How about the story with the trees? Maybe that was easier for us to understand. Do you see yourself as having both roots and shoots, roots and fruits that are in keeping with how the Bible describes a Christian? Are you learning to grow and becoming more like Jesus? Having the fruits of the Spirit that Paul talks of in Galatians, love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, so on. These can sometimes be markers for us if we are really truly have a real faith. If we are there sitting thinking, yeah, I've been a Christian for quite a while actually, but there is no fruit of the Spirit, there is no evidence of that. That's for you to work out in your heart, but have a look at it. Don't just ignore it, thinking, yeah, well, I've said I'm a Christian, that's good enough. James says, what about those works? What about those actions that flow from faith? So we could be in trouble if we're saying that we have faith, but there's nothing to back it up with. Because God's not fooled. He sees the heart. He doesn't just see the words and the actions at the bottom of that triangle. Maybe even you think that you've been missed out on this morning. I'm sorry. Okay? That you don't need faith, perhaps. That you're a good person, but in your own way. Maybe that's how you'd kind of counter that. Well, you know that the triangle that we looked at, you may think that your actions are good. Sometimes your words are good. But your heart is still far from God if you're thinking in that way. Can I respectfully put it to you? If you think your words and your actions are enough to sort you out with God, your heart is in the wrong place, right? Because God looks on the heart. He's not fooled by our actions or by our words, and it is our hearts that matter. You remember what Jesus said, the bad tree cannot produce good fruit. Can I urge you, if you will to do good, if that is your honest desire in your heart this morning, but you would say, maybe I don't have faith, I'm not sure. But if it is your honest desire to be good, and I'm not going to say anything against that, you desire to do good things, even without faith, you may well do. But can I say to you that if you will to do good, ask God to change your heart first. It'll be a whole lot easier. A whole lot easier. But also, you remember that quote I gave you earlier? Religion says, I obey, therefore I'm accepted. The gospel says, I'm accepted, therefore I obey. It's a much more sensible way around to do it. If you will to do good, but sometimes it's just that show, and your heart is not in it. If you don't want God, if you don't want faith, all you're doing is your own kind of religion. All you're doing is trying to be acceptable. You're trying to obey, and then you'll be accepted, hopefully. The gospel, the good news of Jesus Christ says, I'm accepted, not through anything that I've done, but through his goodness to me. And therefore, I do things that are in accordance with that, that are pleasing to God. Can I say also that if you have a desire to do good in your heart, but you don't want anything to do with God, something like that, you put it in different words perhaps, but can I just remind you, I don't know if you remember, the Queen was in Leicester a few years back, 2009. Maybe you remember that. I was just finishing my degree, my undergraduate course, and it just so happens, I don't think they planned it that way, pretty sure they didn't. My degree and my dissertation was due in the same day that the Queen was coming to Leicester. I think it was a coincidence. But anyway, I'd been working all night, I'm pretty sure. It was one of my few all-nighters of working. And so then that very day, she was coming to Leicester Uni to open the brand new library, and maybe you've seen that since. But she was due to be there at some particular time, I forget exactly, sort of 11, 12, because then I had my thing to hand in a bit later. But do you know, if I've been sitting there in my room and gone and had in my dissertation and thought, the Queen's coming to Leicester today, and a few weeks before this, I'm going to write this whole letter out, type it out while I'm doing my, my dissertation as well, but send that off to her and say, I've heard you're in Leicester, this particular date, this particular schedule. I'll be in my sitting room at 2, and I'll see you then. How absurd would that be? How absurd would that be that I would think that I could call upon this woman in such a position of power to come to my schedule, to go to my schedule? And again, respectfully, I want to tell you that if you are in that position of thinking that I can do good things, but I don't need God, I don't need that faith in my heart, I don't need real faith, I've got my own schedule, I've got my own plans, let me say to you respectfully, God is not on your schedule. And it's time to get on his. It's time to get on God's schedule, to come to him, because you are already acceptable to God if you come to him knowing that you are a sinner and that you need forgiveness. Just say again, for example, that I had sent off that little letter and said, yeah, I'll be in my sitting room at 2 p.m. I'll see you then. If there was already an invitation sitting on my mantelpiece that said, you're invited to the Queen's opening of the library of Leicester University at 3, afternoon tea and cucumber sandwiches and all, how absurd would that be? How absurd that I would send my own little letter, my own little schedule, trying to get the Queen to do my thing when I've already been invited. I'm just going to be sitting in that sitting room waiting, and she's not coming, clearly. Respectfully and lovingly, let me say to you, it's time to get on God's schedule. Okay, you may be sitting there thinking, I'm going to be good enough. I'm going to make sure that these things, they get high enough. The bad things, they stay low enough. It's a good, you know, sentiment, I suppose, but that's all it is. God is not on your schedule. God is waiting for you to come home to him. Okay, he's already done. That quote again. Religion says, I obey, therefore I am accepted. The gospel, the Bible, Jesus himself says, you are accepted, and that is only why you obey. Now is the favorable time. Behold, now is the day of salvation. Can I urge you, if you have not yet found true and real faith, if you have not yet received it, even now is the day of salvation. If you're not ready for that just now, come talk to me. Come talk to one of the elders. There's a couple around today. Come talk to them about it. If you just need to work that out a bit further, that's perfectly acceptable. It's perfectly understandable. It's a big decision. But start down that route. Start getting on God's schedule. We've learned a few things from James, I hope, and I hope that's been helpful, talking about real faith. Think about how that heart and the words and our actions interact with each other. And then think about those roots and the fruits. Have you got that full picture? Is your heart, the root of your life, in keeping with the fruits that you put out in the way that you live? Is your heart truly having real faith? Is that where it abides? And is that why you have these words and these actions?